Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So nasty, that is probably somewhat of a travesty having me. Then he told the people, you can call me your majesty. Keep your battery charged, he know it won't stick, yo. And it's not his fault you kick slow. Should've let your trick hold, chick hold your sick glow. Plus nobody couldn't do nothing once he let the brick go. And you know I know, that's a bunch of snow. The beat is so butter, peep the slow cutter as he utter the calm flow. Don't talk about my mom, yo. Sometimes he rhyme quick, sometimes he rhyme slow, or vice versa. Whip up a slice of nice verse pie, hit it on the first try, villain, the worst guy. Spot hot tracks like spot a pair of fat asses. Shots of the scotch from out the square shot glasses. And he won't stop till he got the masses. And show him what they know not through flows of hot molasses. Do it like the robot to head spin to boogaloo. Took a few minutes to convince the average boogaloo. It's ugly, like look at you, it's a damn shame. Just remember all caps when you spell the man name.
Hello and welcome to the Niall or Nine podcast. It is Niall and Andrea here on your feed on the first episode of the Niall or Nine podcast this year. Andrea, how are you?
Hi, happy new year.
Happy new year indeed.
Let's just leave 2020 where it is and let's move forward and pretend it never happened.
As much as I would love to leave it all there, there is one thing I need to address, Andrea, and that is the passing of MF Doom. On New Year's Eve, we received the news that one of the best rappers to ever do it, MF Doom, had passed away 2 months previous. MF Doom is a rapper who styled himself as a supervillain who wore a mask in public. He had died age 49 on Halloween night 2 months previous, but it was only being revealed at that time on New Year's Eve. The mysterious nature of that news just fed into the mythical status of somebody like Doom. Born Daniel Dumoulin, first known as Zev Love X, along with his brother Sub Rock and Rodan, was in their early 90s rap group KMD. After one acclaimed album in 1991's Mr. Hood, Sub Rock tragically died and a follow-up album, Black Bastard, was never properly released. Dumoulin re-emerged as MF Doom at the turn of the century.
Right up on my government, Dumoulin, either unmarked or engraved, hey, who's to say? Doomsday, ever since the womb till I'm back to the essence, read it off the tomb. Either engraved or unmarked grave, who's to say? Pass the mic like pass the peas like they used to say.
Metal-faced Doom character quickly immersed himself in comic book villain-inspired self-produced albums that created a whole new mythos and an origin story. His MF Doom discography would include classic rap albums like his debut, 1999's Operation Doomsday, 2004's MM Food, 2009's Born Like This, along with releases on split character aliases like King Jidera's Take Me To Your Leader, Victor Vaughn's Vaudeville Villain, both released in 2003.
Vaughn, the traveling vaudeville villain.
still a flying fuck who ain't not filling them. Watch what you're dealing them. Ace King Death card. Strong arm the wrong man, pardon the left guard.
There was a real fruitful period around that time, 2003, 2004, where he released a lot of music. Mad Villainy, the collaborative album between himself and Madlib. Doom and Madlib as Mad Villain is widely considered one of the best underground rap albums of all time.
Doom nominated for the best role L's, and they wondered how he dealt with stress so well. Wild guess, you could say he stays sedated. Some say booted, some say faded. Some day prayed that he would grow a farm barn full. Recent research show it's not so darn harmful. Sometimes you might need to detox. It can help you with your rhyme flow and your beatbox.
Absolutely brilliant album. There are also collaborative albums with Danger Mouse as Danger Doom, JJ Doom with Janeiro Janelle, Nehruvian Doom with Bishop Nehru, and a special Herbs beat series showcasing his work as a producer, which often goes underappreciated in the dialogue about MF Doom. Doom's rap style is the most obvious thing about him. He was grizzled and dense, complex, funny, eloquent, and inventive in his use of stream of consciousness word collages and different rhythmic patterns and expectation defying phrasing. Let's happen to listen to Meat Grinder from the Mad Villain record.
Tripping off the beat, kinda dripping off the meat grinder. Heat niner, pimping, stripping, soft, sweet minor. China was a neat sign of trouble with the script digits. Double dip, bubble lip, subtlest midget. Borderline schizo, sort of fine tits dough. Quarter wine, order grind, quarter to nine, let's go. Ever since 10-11, glad she made a brethren. Then his last hour. Seven alligators, seven at the gates to heaven, knocking, no answer. Slow dancer, hopeless romancer, dopest flow stanzas. Yes, no, villain, metal face to Destro. Guess so, still incredible in escrow. Just say ho, I'll test the yayo. Wild West style fest, y'all best to lay low. Hey bro, day glow, set the bet, pay dough. Before the cheddar get away, best to get Mako. The worst hated god who perpetrated odd favors, demonstrated in the perforated rod lavers. In all quad flavors.
Later in the episode, we're going to be hearing from people who worked with Doom, including Lex Records' Tom Brown and Mark Murphy of Choice Cuts, who brought Doom to Ireland. Both have some interesting stories to share about the chaos and pandemonium that Doom brought to the live arena. But first, there's no one else we could think of who's more qualified than Dean Van Wyn to speak about Doom's artistry. Dean was a previous guest on the show where we discussed the book he wrote about Ghostface Killah, who was one of Doom's closest collaborators. And so we will talk to him. We will hear from Tom from Lex Records, and we hear from Mark from Choice Cuts. So let's kick it off. Let's hear a little bit of Rhymes Like Dimes to kick us off.
Hey, yo, yo, y'all can't stand right here. In his right hand was your man's worst nightmare. Loud enough to burst his right eardrum close range. The game is not only dangerous, but it's most strange. I sell rhymes like dimes. The one who mostly keep cash, but brag about the broker time. Joker rhymes like the is you just having to see me trick. Classical slapstick, rappers need chapstick. A lot of them sound like they're in a talent show, so I give them something to remember like the Alamo. Tally-ho, a hot joker like Spades game. Came back for 5 years, laying the stage, the same set. Electromagnetic field, it blocks all logic. Spock and G-Shock's a biological clock. When I hit it, slid it to the shitter, thought I killed a goose. Her power use was pure brittle water filter juice. Keep a pen like a fiend, keep a pipe with him. Gentleman who lent a pen to a friend who write with him. Never seen this shit again, but he's still my dunny. The only thing that come between us is krillin' money.
KMD obviously is a huge, huge influence on for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think because their legacy gets a little bit swallowed up a little bit by what Doom later did, and by the fact that there's such a quintessential kind of piece of his origin story. So you know, they kind of emerged. They put out this album, Mr. Hood, in 1991, and it's, as I say, it's in the vein of a lot of that, you know, the New York stuff, like loads and loads of samples, like really, really great drum breaks. That kind of had that kind of real pass the mic ethos between each member.
That old serpent had the gall, saying that he knew I felt getting still. He's living tall. Yeah, that's a lap, but surely we'll trick him. Flip the coin, make him a gas face.
Yeah, once again, that's how we kick shit. Fade and deck, that's the B-side wins it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but who does the gas face? No gas face for SD50. No gas face for Plugs 1, 2, and 3. No gas face for Michael and Peter.
No gas face for a brand new game.
Stop the gas face, Vic.
Or Uncle Tom.
Stop the gas face, Vic.
Or the
about the New York cabbie?
Yeah, so it's in the kind of vein of like your De La Souls, your Tribe Called Quests. Then in 93, Doom's brother Sub Rock gets killed in a gets hit by a car crossing the, I believe it's the Long Island Expressway. And the following year, their follow up album, which Doom are not well finished without Sub Rock, is cancelled, and they're dropped from the label because of the some of the kind of controversial imagery that was on the cover. So that kind of comes Doom's origin story, if you like, cursed and cast out by the industry in deep mourning. He kind of falls off the grid for about 3-4 years, and then he reemerges as this supervillain character. You know, his voice is now, you know, deepened and has much, is much more kind of malevolent, and his presentation is, say, is that of this villainous character. So I think that because like so much of the narrative, that kind of experience of his life has driven the narrative of his later career, it does kind of swallow up sometimes the fact that KMD were an excellent group in their own right. And probably if Sub Rock hadn't died, we might be looking at them in around the same level as, you know, Adela. So,
you know, he was always apart from the industry then after that. He didn't, like, KMD sounded like it was part of a scene or a style, where then after that, Doom's whole thing was kind of completely separate. He went off on a different path and just forged his own thing. And 1999, Operation Doomsday, and after that he has this amazing run of releases.
Sometimes I get confused about which order the albums came out in, and considering you don't really know when he recorded things, like Mad Villain, they recorded parts of Mad Villain a couple of years before that came out. And because there was problems, I think there was leaks that a lot of that early stuff that they did end up getting scrapped and redone. So, and like in the meantime, then he puts out like other albums. So it's really hard to kind of trace his, if you want to kind of put together his genesis around that time, it's really, really difficult.
Yeah, that 4-year period where he had Take Me to Your Leader, the King Jeter album, which is kind of this B-movie horror, three-headed monster kind of style. That's the villain of this piece. That was released in 2003 in June. Then Vaudeville Villain comes out, and that's as Victor Vaughn, which is kind of the origin story of Doom, who's, you know, the MF Doom character comes from Dr. Doom, who is a Spider-Man, you know, enemy, essentially. He's a villain in the Spider-Man cartoons. There's another Victor Vaughn album that comes out the year later, called Venomous Villain. In between all that somewhere is Mad Villain and Mad Villainy. And then after that comes M Food. So, and then the other thing about him is when it came to live shows. And I don't know, you ever seen Doom live? Did you ever get to see him?
Yeah, I believe you were at the show. I saw him twice at the Button Factory.
Button Factory,
I'm pretty sure you were at the first one anyway.
I was at the first one, yeah.
And the second one was, he ended up playing the exact same, I'm pretty sure it was like an identical set to the first time. Because I remember, you know, in the first show, he had like the fake DJ with the, yeah. I think he pretty much played
DJ Spacebar, yeah. So yeah. Mark from Choice Goods talks about that as well, yeah.
Yeah, he pretty much, I think, played an iTunes playlist backing. And then I think the second time I saw him, which was maybe 1 or 2 years later, he played the exact same show. But yeah, like even his collaborators could never quite get a lock on him. I'm sure if you talk to like the Stone Throw guys, I think I read recently that he was telling them, he's been telling them for years that Mad Villainy 2 is 85% complete. He was always saying, oh, it's 85%, you know?
Well, that might be a good time then to hear from one of those people who worked a lot with MF Doom. This is, you're going to hear from now, from Tom Brown, who signed Doom to his label Lex Records. And he put out records in his later half of his career from the likes of Danger Doom, the collaborative album with Danger Mouse from MF Doom, 2005. Born Like This in 2009, the likes of Nehruvian Doom and JJ Doom that came after that. And Tom has some information, and Tom has some stories about Doom that are interesting. Let's hear a bit from Tom.
How they gave his own show to Tad Ghostal. Any given second he could go mad postal. Stay waving that power band space cannon. And had the nerve to jump in the face, erase Bannon. Pumped out, luckily he deaded it. Guess who's the smuck who's credited with editing it?
Your man Motard, a cop out. Ain't have no other career choice. He dropped out.
I was kept at arm's length on, you know, like on Danger Doom, I was dealing with Danger Mouse. On Born Like This, you know, he'd ring up, or Jazz would ring up, or, you know, like somebody in his team. But quite often Doom, you'd have a chat, send through music, ask for money, you know, like it's pretty normal. The first time I was kind of, I did anything like with him was, you know, we're really ambitious for Born Like This, and the record had taken 3 years to get delivered. And Tom York had said he'd do a remix. He'd done a couple of remixes and sent through the finished remix and the instrumental. And I thought they were really cool. But Doom thought that Tom hadn't placed the a cappella right on the thing. And we were having this chat, and I was like, you know, like you're always saying, you know, people just send you, you know, like Doom beats, you know, like in quote marks, Doom beats. This is a beat I've made for Doom. It's a Doom beat. You know, I'm going to send it to him and get him to rhyme over it. And, you know, like, here's a different kind of beat. Why don't you just drop those bars again, but over this weird beat with a guy singing in the background, and, you know, like, it feels like it's speeding up all the way through. And so he jumped off the phone, and then about 10 minutes later sent back the Tom York remix of Gazillionaire that we know, that's the a cappella, and he just knocked it out like a challenge to see if he could do it.
Villain here, have him shrilling in fear. I won't stop top ill until he a gazillionaire, grill and stare. Yeah, your boy had drama, got him on the mental plane, avoided bad karma. One solar inbred, skinhead, a nigga joke. Plus a brand new chrome smoker with the triggers broke. I thought I told him fire and pins were separate. You find out later when he tries to go and rep it. Took a Jehovah money for an Arabic Torah. Charged in advance to translate it and ignore the sorta. One monkey don't stop, no slaughter. A junkie want a cop a quarter ton, run for the border. Know the drill, it ain't worth the overkill. Flow skill, still, there's no thrill. Fill a billion 10k bills in this pillar. And when it gets real, split the skrilla with.
And so the closer you got to Doom and the people around him, the more chaotic it would get. And it was deliberate. Like, and the idea was to make you feel like you were being shaken down. It was like, you know, like turning the corner and running into the school bullies, and, you know, like, or, you know, running into some bad kids. One time, we had Doom playing a Lex show in Kentish Town, just up from Camden. And, you know, the usual pandemonium had ensued. They claimed that the rider was not right, you know, even though they'd supplied it. And, you know, and it's weird because, like, I also knew Doom socially, Daniel socially, in a one-on-one way. You know, we spent a lot of time together when he moved to London. But it didn't matter if I'd seen him for a pint earlier that day, even. The chaos would resume as soon as, like, his crew were around him. And so he did this thing where he was like, okay, you know, like, Klingon, Ben Klingon was going, that's it. You've blown it. Doom's leaving the building. And he walked out, got into the waiting cab. This is a few years later at the Kentish Town Forum. He got into the cab and drove off, and we were watching him because it was our cab on the app, and he was just doing laps of Regent's Park, you know, which is like a perfect circle a mile away, and we were just watching the car go round and round in circles, and then eventually he came back, you know. But I mean, it was designed to instill panic and confusion in everybody who was involved with him on a transactional basis.
But Doom had his nice side as well, and we'll hear now from Mark from Choice Goods, who brought Doom over twice to play in Dublin, about his experiences. Even though Doom made people wait for 90 minutes on stage, the hijinks was going on off stage. But after the show, everything was cool, and Mark was able to enjoy his company.
The Button Factory, yeah, it was a bit of hijinks, bit of like, what is going on here? What have I entered into? But he kind of, like, I stayed up quite late with him after the show. Like, I had him in the Morrison, which is just kind of like, just a, we just walked back after the show, and his, like, kind of manager, bodyguard, Ben, who was a big, huge guy, like, he kind of just left, and then it was just me and him kind of just drinking for the evening, which was great. And, you know, there's just a lot of kind of common ground to discuss, and I think he kind of liked that. And, like, I think he liked that it wasn't like a big, huge, you know, kind of ordeal to meet. I was just like, thanks, nice. And he was like, let's go for a Guinness, let's have a whiskey, you know, let's have a Bailey's. And he was like having a Bailey or Guinness, Bailey's and a whiskey every round. I remember that. And, you know, we're up to like God knows hours, but yeah, it was great just to kind of hang with him. So it was like the masks off. He's just, you know, very interested in what I'm doing. He's just asking questions about Ireland, you know, talking about England, what he's up to with his new releases and stuff. So it was like, you know, as a fanboy, it was a superb evening out after the show.
So there's a bit of background info, what it was like to hang out with Doom and what it was like to work with Doom.
I think in an era now where you've got social media access, TMZ, reality TV, all that stuff, kind of stars are more accessible than they've ever been. And he was one of the real few who held a mystique. Some big pop stars can hold a kind of mystique to them, but he was the one who had a true sense of mystery surrounding him.
That makes me think of something that you wrote in your introduction to your Substack piece that you put out in the wake of the news of his death. You said that he's a rapper that felt more mythos than man. And I wonder how much of what you love about him is beyond the music and in this kind of secretive mask wearing, always keeping you guessing as to what's going on, keeping you guessing as to whether or not that's really him at the gig. All this kind of fun and joy that surrounds the character and surrounds all the different characters that he plays. I wonder just what impact did that have on you and what you think the impact of this sort of character-driven rap music had on his contemporaries and the people that kind of followed him?
I do find the presentation and the mystique he held and let's say the mythos to be impactful. It wasn't just an image. When you think about what he went through with KMD and you know, losing his brother, and how he kind of came back as this person who felt probably scorned by the industry, you know, rejected in a little way, decided to rediscover himself as a villain and leaning towards Dr. Doom. And as you say, like, the Vaudeville Villain album goes deep into the genesis of Dr. Doom as well, and how he saw parallels with that in himself, and how he very rarely showed vulnerability on his albums, but when he did, when he let something through, like when he, you know, dedicate a song to Sub Rock's brother, it was always quite impactful. The package was moving as well to me, because I think there is like an element of truth to a lot of those kind of stories. And if we're talking about the idea of superpowers and what it's like, the idea that superpowers might exist, like, for me, he rapped so well that it probably qualifies as like a superpower. I mean, maybe some people believe that comes from a higher place that we don't can ever understand, and it was gifted to him. Or maybe you believe that it's inherently instilled in some humans naturally, that we have special abilities that other people don't have. But yeah, for me, if he had the kind of the powers that he almost presented. And as I say, he couldn't have been dedicated so much to that character and or to the form, I suppose, he took if it wasn't natural to him. And then it seemed to come natural to him. I mean, like, ridiculous things, you know, crazy stuff always kind of seemed to happen when he was around. And like, I posted that story just when we were talking about that Button Factory gig, the first one, when he pulled up like a couple of women onto stage just to kind of dance around. And I recognized one of them who was like, she was on the Irish Apprentice at the time. So that, that like wrapped, I'm sure, I think they'd finished filming, but it was in the middle of the season when they were, it was still on TV and she was still on the show. And it was just like one of those things, like Doom could never have known who she was, but yeah, this kind of natural ridiculousness always just seemed to kind of follow him. I say like when you went to his gig and that, you, I think that gig was probably pretty, maybe it was at the height of kind of the Doom posters and when he was sending other guys in metal masks to his shows.
From what I understand in the last 2 weeks is listening to a lot of people talk about him, and it's like the imposter thing literally came from the fact that he wanted his money and he couldn't be in two places at once. So he just like, let's just send somebody else in the mask to do it. And they did. Like, it's literally as simple as that. He's just like, there's a lot of, I've heard a lot of talk about him getting that feta and wanting that money and getting paid in full up front and making that big part of the show and before he went on and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, there is that, you know, you want Victor, you want MF Doom, you got to pay him first, you got to pay him up front. What is the line from one of my favorite line, half up front, half upon mastering. Would you like that in cash? The last thing you should ask the king from Phasers. So let's talk a bit about like some of his lyrics actually. Let's play a bit of Vaudeville Villain actually.
I caramba, now that's my number. One dry summer, as far as I remember, burnt out. We're getting every edgy penny. Then he hit him straight to the head like Reggie Denny. Call him back when you need some more yak, horse yak. Doing 80 down the Van Wick on horseback. Your man sick when he wrecked tracks, Pluto. Get back to bro, Exactamundo. Victor the director, flip a script like Rob Reiner. The way a lot of dudes rhyme, their name should be Knob Shiner. For a buck, they likely dance the jiggle, do the hucklebuck. To Vic, it's no big deal, they just a bunch of knuckle fucks. You wonder how well would they hold up in the holding cell. It sorta had the strange makings of a tale told in hell. Like, oh well, whole tour riches. If the feds is really after them, they just told all the snitches. And borrowed time rhymes, gassed by the silver screen. They act like they monkey ass, get healed back like Wolverine. Mellow out with y'all bellow out, y'all yellow mouth. What happened to the type of spit that used to help a fellow out? No doubt, leave a raptor in a body cast. I wonder what he was doing while we was in karate class. Snotty ass, it's really like he was a white belt. Right before he night-night, ask him how the light felt.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about like Doom's actual rap style. Because, you know, how do you even explain it? It's dense, it's cryptic, it's complex, it's kind of stream of consciousness, but it's not, because it sounds like that, but it's every word is carefully chosen and put in. Like, I love, there's so many like simple lines that he has as well that I like really always stand out to me. Like, you hear there on Vaudeville Villain, I Carumba, and that's my number one dry summer as far as I remember, you know, just very simple. Or like, to name names, a really big fan of Dan Aykroyd, for example, you know, it's just like the kind of thing that people use in their lyrics that they just, no one else really does. No one else really does that. And even like talk about Phasers, I love that kind of his own biggest fan, and he got a fan base as big as Japan. Yeah. And like, just really, really simple, but like really super effective. He was a bit of a master at that. Not only the other part of him is that he was so good at switching up the rhythmic patterns in his and the syllables in, you know, the famous example is on Great Days, like, and I wish they fixed the door to the Matrix, there's mad glitches, spit so many verses, sometimes my jaw twitches, one thing this party could use is more booze.
Last wish, I wish I had two more wishes, and I wish they fixed the door to the Matrix, is mad glitches, spit so many verses, sometimes my jaw twitches, one thing this party could use is more booze. Put yourself in your own shoes and stay away from all the pairs of busted Timbs you don't use.
What about you, Dean? What do you think? What was his, you talked it as a superpower, his rap style. So what about his word choices?
Well, when Dre asked me there about his, what other artists have taken from him, or I suppose his lasting influence, I don't think, as soon as anyone uses internal rhyme patterns, they're instantly compared to Doom. Like, he absolutely perfected that technique. Like, even listening to just those two bars, I mean, he's like in two bars there, he's rhymed Carumba, number, summer, remember, you know. Just as a rap critic, you're constantly moved to compare things to Doom when other people use these kind of patterns, and in other cases as well, when people rap over weird pop culture samples or drop weird pop culture references, because that's another thing he had this incredible hold on or incredible knowledge of, is this sense of Americana, where obviously the comic books were big things, but there was a kind of a sense of old gothic soap operas. But yeah, I think he stuff like that would work into his music. And then there's the Japanese pop culture stuff as well, like King Ghidorah, as you mentioned.
There's always a sense of him being somebody that's playing. I think there's a wonderful playfulness to him. It's almost like he's accessing or allowing access to a kid who is just, sitting on the floor in their living room, just surrounded by comic books and VHSs and pictures on the wall from their favorite movies and TV shows, and doing it in such a slick and poetic way, but not losing the idea that this is somebody that's playing. And then that obviously transforming into him playing with words and playing with rhymes and playing with samples. He just always sounds, even though he has this kind of his tone when he's rapping isn't exactly huge and upbeat and bombastic or anything, it just sounds like somebody that's having a lot of fun,
Some of the other things, I suppose you could say pioneered almost, he'd frequently rapped about himself in the third person. Things just just bending the rules of what you could do. And you say you could almost compare it to a bit like a jazz drummer, where every syllable was in, just felt like it was in the correct place. And to talk about superpowers, you have to have this just superhuman knowledge of timing and language to make this work. And then he mixes that with, when you think of how nimble his wordplay is and how nimble his flow is, and he mixes that with this voice which felt was so gruff and so powerful. And then even the older he got and the kind of almost the deeper his voice got, you get to some of the later albums like Born Like This, and it's almost as if he's had too many cigars and whiskeys. His voice is continuing, the octave just continues to drop, and he never lost that nimbleness of what he could do.
He does refer to that actually on Keys to the Cuffs in a way. Here's a good example of a line he manages to rhyme a vocal with the Icelandic volcano Eyjafjallajökull. So, those kind of things. He was able to do that, but he was also able to do something very simple as well.
Yeah, and one of the things as well that sometimes gets, because he was such a singular and exceptional rapper, even in tributes, people have kind of forgotten that he often went missing on his albums. There's some albums that he didn't rap on a lot. Even on
Take Me to Your Leader is a good example. Yeah, he's not really on that.
Yeah, I think he produces every song on that and lends space to all his kind of collaborators, it was just another ripple to the mystery of the man, where he had this kind of platoon of henchmen almost, where you never quite knew who they were or what they were doing. Sometimes underground rappers would appear on his albums under alternate names. And, he had those kind of a couple of core guys like MF Grimm and Mr. Fantastic, who he would deploy, but didn't achieve a whole lot outside of the Doom universe, I suppose. And then he frequently did, he dedicate a lot of space on albums to just audio from cartoons and all other sorts of sources that he'd find, and he'd splice it together and use that to kind of push the narratives that he wanted. And he had a great obsession, I suppose, or hunger for these different parts of pop culture. But you never felt even when he wasn't around on his albums, it was never a kind of a less is more kind of thing. You always felt his presence. He almost felt like he was always the guiding hand.
Well, that's because his production was always there, wasn't it? Pretty much, like, if it wasn't on his own albums.
Yeah, and that's another thing that kind of goes overlooked sometimes. Like, he had a really, really singular production style where you think songs like, you know, Beef Rap and where he samples like audio from a Spider-Man cartoon, but it's so like he doesn't try to hide. If you go back and actually watch the original Spider-Man cartoon, like it's basically unvarnished. Like, he just takes it, and I think so many people would think, well, you just can't do that, like it just doesn't work. But
enough.
He was,
you talk of the people's rights. The people have only those rights which I choose to give them, and that's for their own good, believe me.
I do too.
They disappoint me. They must work faster.
But the prisoner.
Ah, yes. The young traitor who is trying to turn my people against me. Watch him. I have special plans for that one.
Beef Rap can lead to getting teeth capped or even a reef from armed dudes on some beef crap. I suggest a change of diet. It can lead to
He had the bravery, I suppose, to kind of bend those rules. And then, like, say he produced for you know, Ghostface and did some great stuff.
On New Year's Eve, when the news broke, I told Harry, boyfriend Harry, listeners know who he is, who is the biggest MF Doom fan that I know, and so naturally a good portion of the rest of the evening was spent just kind of listening to his music and him playing me some of his kind of choice tracks. And something that he said to me was that MF Doom is such a good rapper that his production often goes overlooked, that he's also one of the greatest producers that's ever worked in the genre. I wonder if you'd agree with that, if he is overlooked as a producer because we talk so much about his lyrics and his rhyme schemes and all of the stuff that he did to kind of push that area of rap.
Yeah, forward. And I think part of that is the consequence of the fact that his albums were often defined because he did a lot of joint albums with producers like Danger Mouse and obviously Madlib and that. But yeah, and the fact that he was a collaborator of guys like Madlib and J Dilla, who were famously picky about who they worked with. I suppose the consequence of those two things somewhat overshadow what he could do as a producer. But he was just incredibly singular and original as a producer. And and then you take something like Dead Bent, which he uses things like the sample for Isaac Hayes's version of Walk On By. Like, that's an absolute just crate digging staple. Like, no rap producer doesn't have that, and it's been used on, it's probably one of the most sampled soul songs of all time. But the fact that he took that and he did stuff with it that, you know, maybe no one else's is brain could even contemplate, like, you know, I know the producer Grip Grand who did a, like, one of the best unauthorized Doom projects called GG Doom, which people should listen to. But he kind of calls that song like this masterpiece of tension and release, where if you listen to Dead Bent, for most of the song he's kind of flipping between two chords which are noticeably are easily identifiable from the Isaac Hayes song. But then it just builds this kind of, like, it's like a rumbling tension to it. And then he releases that tension by playing a sweeter portion.
North, I crashed the barbecue like Riddick at the Garden Truth. That's the garden me, pardon you. Cheapest, I was told back. The whole gang access to my beeper. Call back my secretary gatekeeper. Like, I ain't peeper. I said, darling, you was stupid though. You know the super villain. Home. I had this style ever since I was a child. I got this upper style, I ain't flipping a while. It goes pure science.
For the natural ability he had with rapping, he also had he had an instinct as well for things like loops.
Yeah, and sampling people like Sade and Steely Dan and all sorts of stuff. So just
right. Yeah, because as I say, like as much as cartoons and comics and monster movies and all that were part of his taste and made a part of his artistry in the end, that he loved the kind of 80s sophistopop sound. Sade, I think like Jody Watley was another person he sampled. So yeah, like those that kind of era of, I think that's a really great era for soul music actually. Who was the Anita Baker as well? It's like he was able to kind of draw from those sources, which I think because maybe it's a more unheralded era than kind of like the 70s and the Stevie Wonder stuff and all that kind of stuff. It always gets samples that again it kind of set him apart a little bit.
I wanted to ask both you guys, so I sort of came to Doom really not that long ago, probably about 6 years ago or something. I was really late, and I guess I found getting into him and his music really, really overwhelming because I had no idea where to start. There were all these different characters. Everything isn't collated nicely on Spotify in his artist profile, you know. So I kind of eventually found my way in, but through a lot of it kind of took a lot of work on my part to find the aspects of his music that I liked the most. So what I wanted to ask kind of both of you, where for somebody who's listening to all this and thinking, oh my God, this all sounds like it's going to be a lot of work, where would you recommend somebody to start if you're just getting into this?
Yeah, see, act? I mean, you say obvious album. I mean, the thing is, probably the most celebrated album is Mad Villainy, which is not really an MF Doom album, but it is to me, to a lot of people, it's a peak of his rapping style. It's a peak of the kind of dense wordplay, but it's also paired with Madlib's productions. So, I mean, that's a great place to start because it's considered by a lot of people to be one of the best underground rap albums of all time. And then after that, I mean, personally, I guess, I mean, we all take our own journeys into this stuff. I mean, I think what you have to remember is that there's Mad Villain, there's MF Doom, then Victor Vaughn and King Jidra are the main names associated with Doom. His first album, Operation Doomsday, has a lovely charm to it as well because it does kind of establish the origin. I love that. I think one of my favorites is probably Vaudeville Villain because it's so plays up to that villainous backstory with the cartoon samples and stuff like that. And then look, if you're interested in those two, then I think you'll be flying after that because what came afterwards is stuff like Born Like This. You had then the album with Danger Mouse called Danger Doom, which is essentially a pretty funny one. Actually, I was really into it at the time.
That's one of my favorites. That's one of the ones that when I found it, I think I went from Mad Villainy to Food and then to Danger Doom. And I was like, oh, I think this is where I live. This is my little house here.
Because that was essentially like, I think it was a free album at the time. I think it was a free.
Oh, yeah?
I think, was that, am I right in saying that? I think it was given out free as part of like an Adult Swim kind of on the website originally. And then there was proper release. I could be wrong about that, but I kind of remember that at the time. And you know, the whole thing about that is that it's really leans into the cartoon thing. It's essentially a marketing exercise for Adult Swim and a lot of the characters that they had, like Aqua Teen Hunger Force and Space Ghost and stuff like that. But to me, I love it. I think it works so well. And the two, like, it was one of those albums where it was like, yeah, Danger Mouse and Doom together, and this makes a lot of sense. Mm. The thing about it is, I mean, you get to, there was a bit of a break between that album and then Born Like This in 2009, which is maybe a little bit darker and comes after, features some of, like, the Ghostface stuff. And then there's other, maybe less important stuff. I think probably his latter career does struggle a little bit to live up to the past stuff, but there's still great stuff on every album. That's the thing. Mm. That's why Doom is so prolific. Like, I've been listening to Doom for now the last 2 weeks since we found out that he had passed, and there's very little there that you'd want to skip, you know?
What about you, Dean?
In terms of, like, best place to start? Well,
yeah, a way in.
You know, when I did the album ranking piece that you mentioned, it kind of became a 10. I didn't do the KMD stuff in that, but the first six were naturally, like, easily, I ranked them easy, but literally the top four at different times, I had them all in completely different order. Like, there was a time when each one of the top four was number one, and eventually, I could have completely shuffled those four. So, which were, eventually went, one was Mad Villain, two Vaudeville Villain, I think, three Umfood, and four was Operation Doomsday. So, I mean, it's just so hard to separate those. Like, they're kind of different sides. I mean, the Mad Villain one is, I think I compared it to when Marvel Comics did their Ultimate Universe stuff around the kind of turn of the millennium, which was them retelling the origin stories of their best characters or some of their best loved characters for a more modern age. So things like, instead of being bitten by a radioactive spider, Spider-Man is now bitten by a biologically engineered spider, shit like that, you know? Nick Fury changes from the kind of square-jawed white guy he had been to literally looking like Samuel Jackson. Like, Samuel Jackson was in the comic before he was cast in the movies, funny enough. So that album kind of feels like that to me, where it's this just taking the Doom origins, taking everything you know about him and just refining it and not so much updating it, because he still obviously was around, hadn't been around for very long at that point as Doom, but I suppose just polishing it and presenting it in this new, really, really interesting way, because he had a hand like Madlib to help him. But all four of those are just classics. Like, that's the thing, like, all great rappers don't make great albums. Doom made the albums, like, he has so many classics. I wouldn't put really anyone above him. I think when I kind of think about my favorite rappers, I kind of have the Holy Three rather, which is Doom, Biggie, and Ghostface. I'd probably put Kanye in there if it's like a four, as like the four great rap artists. But then Kanye's not as good as rapper as either three. So if you're taking great rapping as a prerequisite to be at the top table, then I would say those three. I began, like, when you think of all the things you need to be to be a great rap artist, you obviously you have to be able to rap. You're going to make great albums. You have to be a great beat picker, collab picker. Being a great producer obviously helps, which he was. I don't like Danger Doom as much, funny enough.
No?
Oh, it's definitely dated a bit.
When I say that, like, we have to kind of prelude that by saying that it's still better than like 99% of all rap music.
Yeah, don't fucking come at me, right, little Mr. Experts over here. I like my little Danger Doom album, okay?
It's fun. I love it too.
It's funny. It's a good time. It makes me think of a sunny day.
Maybe it was just too on the nose for me. It was like, beforehand, they're like, you know, a Adult Swim themed album where the producer is a guy who's taken his moniker from the cartoon character Danger Mouse. This all worked a little bit too well on paper.
When I listened to that album first, I had no idea about the Adult Swim connection or anything like that. I just kind of heard it as it was. Like, I didn't even know most of the characters that he was talking about. I was just like, this character seems cool. This seems fun. And then I kind of learned about that later, and I was like, yeah, I don't mind it. That's fine. I'm glad I didn't know about it beforehand, because I think that might have colored how I thought about it. But I think it's really, really fun.
It is better
not
to know about it, for sure.
Yeah. Sorry to all the listeners.
Yeah, that's just looking at the track list. Does have really some good songs, though. It's got a Ghostface Killah song. Space Hose is a really good song.
Yeah, and in fairness to Doom, like, he took that and ran with it, like, doing songs about those artists or those cartoon characters, and he really does, you know, as you'd expect from a man who's a supervillain himself, really embodies, you know, all about that. Even the song about Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, you're like, this is good crack, right?
We need food.
What are you doing there?
I'm rapping.
Yeah. No, I see that.
What for? Money. That I want just some steady bitches and hoes. And some candy for my nose. Some dino stones. A roll with my chrome.
Hey, genius. You even know what that means?
What does it mean?
Where's the keyboards and the tambourine and the guitar? And, you know, I mean, the stuff that, like, white people like.
You want a piano?
Something badass. Like, I don't know, like REO Speedwagon or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, yo, I know this dude, right? Carl, he wore tight blue sweats but wasn't glued too tight. All he had upstairs was a crude light. You think that's weird? He lived next door to a food fight. Howdy, danger, much obliged for the beat guard. Even though you still eat lard by the meat ward. Mesquite charge, speaking of which or who. Voice all squeaky like they tuned it up a pitch or two.
And Dean, so obviously you're an expert of in Ghostface, all aspects Ghostface. So do you know much about, like, how they hooked up in the first place or why?
Not really. I mean, that's the thing, like, so much of Doom's life is just completely mysterious. Like, he was, like, one of the things that I've been thinking about in the last few days is that I still don't know if he ever got back to America after he was refused entry because he was born in Britain. Though he did not, he was born in Britain and moved to New York, I believe. See, you can never be sure what he tells you, but I believe that his parents were apparently visiting London again, like back in London to visit family when he was born or something like that. But he didn't identify at all, really, I don't think, as British, or at least he claimed he didn't. But during a tour, because he never got American citizenship, during a tour, they didn't let him back in. And that's about 10 years ago. So I don't know if he ever actually managed to get back in. But like these are just these kind of aspects, like the mystery of the man.
Well, I mean, the fact that he died on Halloween night and we didn't find out about it on the 31st of October, at least, we didn't find out about it until New Year's Eve. And like in all of the group chats that I was in or whoever I spoke to about it, everyone's like, obviously shock, but then the next thing is like, well, of course we didn't find out about it until now. Only him we could find out in this way, like, because the immediacy of I'm hesitant to use the word celebrity, but of musicians and artists' deaths in the past decade or so with social media and so on, the immediacy at which we find out about these things has just been so stark. And for this to have happened in the way that it did, and for the statement to be made in the way that it was, it just sort of underscores that mystery around the man himself, you know?
Yeah, well, here's a man who wore a mask in his public persona, but, you know, like, it has been noted that, you know, he wore a mask not only to protect himself, but also to keep people at bay. Maybe that's part of it. You know, he could turn up in a bar in Atlanta and no one would have known if he was him. He could turn up backstage or at his own gigs beforehand half the time and not be recognized. So, you know, he did foster that mystique. And I think it is a very fitting end in terms of, we still don't know how he died. And we still don't know what the circumstances were. But what we have learned is that anyone else who knew him professionally and was close to him professionally didn't know about this until New Year's Eve either. So that is a surprise as well.
Yeah, because like not only would it be, is really unlikely to think of another artist on his of his legend whose death wouldn't be found out by the public for 2 months. The fact that aspect of the story didn't surprise anyone, I think, tells how little we really knew about him. And like, I did really love that stuff. Like sometimes there was times when he'd post videos from an island like this, as if he was on his island lair and things like that. And he kind of had fun with it as well. But I suppose just to answer your question about Ghostface, I think it was pretty apparent why they were kind of so naturally went together. Like they both had that appreciation for comic books. When you think Ghostface had often brought samples from cartoons into his work as well, and he gravitated towards Iron Man for his reasons. And one thing about Doom as well is, like, as much as we talk about like the classic albums, you have to also think about the albums that didn't get made, like Mad Villainy 2, which maybe some material from we'll hear again. But also there was the really long touted Swift and Changeable album that was going to be a joint album with him and Ghostface Killah, which never came to be. And
is that like the Doomstarks record?
Doomstarks, yeah, exactly. Doomstarks, yeah.
Well, now might be the time to hear from Tom Brown from Lex Records again, because he has a very particular story about Doom and Ghostface, one of the shows that the two of them did together in London, and more panic and a pandemonium that ensued from that. And he also talks a little bit about the Doomstarks record as well. So let's hear from Tom.
You know, I'm sure he thought of him as a friend or an equal or whatever, but he was also kind of in awe of that era of classic Wu-Tang Clan. He'd been booked to play with Ghostface, who he'd already essentially recorded an album with, in the 100 Club, which is a tiny kind of classic jazz venue in London. And it was the night he met Bishop Nery. I'm not giving anything away, but he checked himself out of hospital that day, because, and everyone there would have known that, because he was wearing a hospital gown with a jacket over it, presumably so his butt didn't stick backward on stage in the 100 Club. Nobody seemed to comment on it much, but he was wearing a hospital gown, the mask, and he brought his laptop and just plugged in the laptop, and, you know, as he used to call it at shows, you know, DJ Spacebar. I think the thing with Doomstarks was they had a real chemistry, recorded a bunch of stuff. It had a really deep running theme, you know, which was that kind of Charlie's Angels, New York-y murder mystery thing. And some of it got cannibalized by More Fish. One track, Angels, ended up on Born Like This, which we'd already released as a kind of standalone, you know, like digital single at that stage, and then, or a different version of it. And they were kind of at that kind of two-thirds stage of getting an album together. Then quite a few years later, you know, after both their voices had changed, there was another attempt, and they started working together and recorded some more stuff that didn't sound as good. There are probably other ones dotted around. But, I mean, you know, I kind of think, I don't know how it would work creatively or artistically, but there's definitely enough material to pull together a kind of classic era MF Doom unreleased album of tracks, you know, from the Doomstarks and Mad Villain. Hey, yo,
it was three white bitches who worked for Tony Starks. Undercover agents far beyond Knox. Amazed by their beauty marks. Wonder Woman bracelets, knee-high boots that was made by Clarks. My dick got hard on how they spoke and shit. Every language was music to the kid, as if I was modern day King Midas. Doreen, Sky and Kelly, Starkey's Angel, Shylin's finest. Though it happened in the streets of Brooklyn. Plus I played the whip real low, cause my face was wolf and my angels jetted out of Albee Square. Gun out rapping their head, kinda crowded, so they clapped in the air. Chase a nigga down block for block, squeezing Glocks. These mommies real anxious to blow off his top. He's a rapist, murderer, convict, burglar. The more they ran, the more these skirts got dirtier. Sending shots like check day, FedEx Expressway, boom, bow, bing, you heard the gunplay.
Who shot the duck out the window?
Mr. Lee said, three pay now, you fucking weed head. We can stop the fire, the suspect, he's dead. Then I pulled up, come on girls, the club mad.
Stay tuned for the conclusion, Three's Company. Family jewels, two brown sisters, the sister to Villain Doom. He woke up stoked like they were still in his room. Freed his right arm and leg, it was more like a sweep. Released his other leg, arm, head, and rose to his feet. Staggering, except for the socks and mask smacking. Threw on the boxes, searching for the trio. Checking for the keys, the dough. A robbery expected, yet nothing obvious was missing. Recollected now why Hollywood hottie stepped into something Zanotti's. Personal nurse Chanel, person CLK shoddy. Trace to Patrizzi with Thai iced tea. She drive wild nights to veggie fried rice.
Do you think now we'll hear some of that that music maybe?
Oh yeah, and I'm sure there's like loads of stuff floating around on hard drives that we'll have to hear, and yeah, like so you never really knew kind of where a lot of this stuff came from. Like a lot of times as well, you'd hear about there's going to be a new Doom track or a new produced by Doom collaboration or something, and the beat would end up being from his kind of Special Herbs series, which he put out years ago of just beats. So like that, like just, you couldn't never quite keep up with exactly when he did what. Yeah, even when if a new Doom song came out and you kind of wanted to write about it, you always had to consider, well, that probably shouldn't take this necessarily in time. It doesn't say too much. It might not say anything about what Doom is up to or who he is at this particular moment in time. No, this could have been recorded 3-4 years ago. But yeah, I'm sure that there's probably a bunch of stuff out there that will see the light of day. I don't know if we're gonna get the full Doomstarks record or anything like that, but I'm sure some stuff will start to come out. Even like, yeah, I mean, people piece together their own things. Like Stone's Throw did a pretty good Twitter thread of all the Dilla Donuts, the beats from that album that Doom had rapped over. Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. Like these are beats that I think any other rapper would slowly walk towards the studio door if they were asked to rap on. And yeah, you can really see why, I suppose, he was one of the rappers.
Yeah, absolutely. And Lightworks was the one from Born Like This that he actually did rap over as well, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, and that's like perfect example of like how you get your head around writing a verse to that beat. Yeah. is crazy. But that's a really good album as well, actually. I think speaking of, you know, when I say Danger Doom isn't as good, is just, we have to put it by incredibly high standards. I feel like sometimes like that, well, that album was kind of a later one, so it didn't kind of get as critically revered, but probably because people were comparing it to the old stuff. But I think that album holds up really well. And it was, I think it was a good evolution of him too, because, you know, he came back and his voice had gotten kind of deeper, and the whole album's a lot more sinister. And, you know, instead he'd kind of gone from, when you think all the way back to the KMD stuff, and he was rapping back alongside these kind of Sesame Street characters, and then through to like the comic book stuff. And then on this album, he's following this Bukowski verse about things like, you know, being cheaper to die than to go to hospital and stuff like that. It was just, I think a great evolution of the sound. It's a pretty underrated album.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's plenty there for anyone who is not familiar with Doom, and even the people who are familiar with Doom. And hopefully, you know, we may hear some more music from this underground bunker, this underground lair of his that maybe did exist, maybe didn't exist. Maybe it was in London, maybe it was in New York, maybe it was in Atlanta. That's part of the fun of the Doom character of MF Doom overall, is like, you never knew where he was going, where he came from. And sadly, we do know that he isn't going to be around anymore, but there may be more music to come, who knows. But in the meantime, we lift a Guinness to Doom himself. Thanks again to Dean Van Wyn, whose book, Iron Age, The Art of Ghostface Killer, is out now on headstuff.org. You can buy it. And thanks also to Tom Brown from Lex Records and Mark Murphy from Choice Cuts for their contributions on MF Doom. Andrea, we will be back in the next couple of weeks before January is out with another episode of the 909 podcast, maybe talking about some of the favorite music we've enjoyed in January. We will see. But until then, anything else to add?
Dean also wrote a brilliant piece on his Substack, deanvanwyn.substack.com, called The Power and the Peril, MF Doom's Albums Ranked. And that is a tribute/ranking of all of his albums, and it's a brilliantly written piece from you can subscribe to my Substack, andreacleary.substack.com, and our Patreon is patreon.com/909. Thank you so much to everybody who signed up for it so far, and we have a lot of really fun plans for 2021, some different things and some similar things, so stay tuned.
We'll finish with a bit of MF Doom. Why not? What is the magic that makes one's eyes sparkle and gleam, light up the skies?
The name of the game is life.
I see you're peeing in your pants, little sissy boy.
Jerks. Welcome to the octagon, lay a player flat before the trainer felt his clock was on. Keep your socks torn, it's a boxathon with hard rock, black rock and rons going barbazon. Curled up, begging, laying on the canvas instead of in a ready position like praying mantis. Scissors, land this grand fist sandwich, stance with slam on stitches, switch hands itch. Damn snitch, any street corner could be the platform to meet defeat. Corner wonder, watch your mouth, draw south four outs floor. Doubt your clout, more about raw outscore. Boy, off the leash like UFC, off the beat, off your feet like two lefties. FUBs, heifer please, lost a few to stew beef, new referees. What a remarkable team, show your teeth. Wipe off slight smirks. The match was mapped out. Get jabbed and crap slapped out, tapped out. Either the lunch bin or chokehold time. Munchkins get punched in like vocal rhyme. The right hurts.
Universal beatdown.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.